Hi, today is November 18th, 2017. This is MoViews Podcast number 231. I'm Connor Gossard, my good friend John Westfall. And today we're welcoming back our frequent guest panelist, former co-host Frank McPherson, for our ninth podcast anniversary. So I started this podcast way back in 2008, '08, when I was still a full-time mobile tech blogger, short-lived but much enjoyed period of my life. And Frank was nice enough to come on as a quasi-regular co-host for a couple of episodes. And now he's back 9 years later. Hey, Frank.
Yep. 1 year away from a big 10-year anniversary.
Absolutely.
I guess that our first episode coincided with the launch of Android, because I was reading a couple weeks ago that this is actually the 10-year anniversary of the beta for Android. So I'm guessing there is about a year. So, yeah, a year from now, we'll be getting together and talking about 10 years of talking about Android.
Yeah. In fact, I think if I remember right, when I looked it up, I think it was episode number 2 was the impressions on the G1.
Right. That's right. The T-Mobile G1, the very first Android phone. Frank kept his, bought a gigantic battery pack for it, as I recall. And I returned mine within the two-week return period, because the battery life just wasn't good enough, and I wasn't willing to carry a giant battery pack. So I think...
And I was the latecomer to the party. I didn't buy a G1 until, I think, February or March of 2009, just to play with. So you guys are ahead of the game.
Well, you were ahead of me. You had a lot longer with it than I did. Because, like I said, I only owned it for 13 days. I will say, though, I really enjoyed the trackball on that thing. I thought that was, or thumbball, whatever you want to call that thing. That was pretty cool. I still wish we had it sometimes, because, you know, as good as the touch interface is these days, sometimes when you just want that precision movement of the mouse cursor, or I'm sorry, of the cursor on the screen to, you know, get in between to edit an email or Facebook status post or Twitter tweet or whatever. It was a really handy little deal. And it was also nice to have that keyboard that pulled out, a physical keyboard. Back in the days when the visual keyboard, I didn't think was that good, to be honest.
Well, in the original firmware, there was no visual keyboard.
That's right. That's right.
The G1, you could only use the physical keyboard with.
Yeah. Although Apple had their visual keyboard out for a year, and people seemed to like that, and I could never understand that.
And that little roller ball was also, if I recall, an LED light. It had different colors, so you could see notifications.
It was really cool. I'm really...
I'm trying to think if that was on the G1 or if that was on the Nexus 1.
It was
the Nexus
G1.
One was colored. The G1, I don't know if the G1 had a...
You know, I think you're right. Yeah.
Colored LED. Yeah.
But it was a really interesting innovation, I thought. And I was very disappointed that nobody else picked it up, because I thought it was really, really a good way to deal with a small screen, you know. And given that as Frank reminded me, John reminded me, didn't really have a visual keyboard for the first go round.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what are you using these days, Frank? Have you changed phones? Are you still on your?
I just got a Pixel 2.
Nice.
A couple weeks ago, I guess. So.
Probably about the same time I did. Yep, very nice. And what case did you buy for it? I'm polling people.
I ordered a live case and had a picture that I had taken actually on my wedding anniversary this past August out on Lake Michigan, a sunset picture, and they made a case out of that, and so that's pretty good.
Okay, so tell us about the live case. I looked at it, and I really didn't know what it did, so I didn't order one.
Well, there's a couple of different approaches you could take. The one that I took is to take a picture that I had, and they give you some online tools to basically pick the section of the picture you want to use as the case back, and they just upload it and make the case from it.
Well, that's pretty cool.
And then there's an app that you can install that will display that picture as a wallpaper on the phone. Not a really very big deal. One of the ones that may be a little more interesting is that you can also get a case using basically Google Maps. So you could get a map, say, of your hometown or something like that, as the picture on the back of the case. And in the wallpaper that would come with that is a live wallpaper that would basically show the map of your current location and change, apparently. So there is those two things. They've also, I think, got, they're using the same technology for producing these cases to use some artistry. I think if you go out there and look, they've got a few artists that have contributed works to use for cases. So that's just the basic plastic case. They have in a couple different sizes, one that I think is a little heavier and thicker than the other that costs about $10 more. I just got the basically the one layer. I think they call it one or two layer cases. And they also have, I understand, some cases that are made out of fabric, kind of like the fabric that's on the Google Home or the Home Mint. And I've read about that. I obviously don't have that, but that sounds kind of appealing as well.
Yeah, actually, a coworker of mine got his 2XL, yeah, his Pixel 2 XL in the other day, and he opted for the case with the cloth-like material in the back. And I thought it was going to be really grungy and sweat-attracting, but it actually felt really comfortable. You know, and I, you know, I kind of retract my previous criticism of it sight unseen. It looks like a pretty nice case, actually. It looks very comfortable to hold, and you know, the Pixel's kind of slippery, so you really do need a case. I continue to be unhappy with my OtterBox Defender case. I've got a new case on order. Hopefully it'll be here before Thanksgiving. One can only hope. And hopefully I'll have a, but if that doesn't work out, I'll go buy, it was, I think I'll go try one of those live cases. I have a couple of photos I might want to file through to pick one out. Okay, so you've got that two. You've got the Pixel 2 like I did, the small. Now,
correct.
I didn't go with the larger one either because I think, as I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, I literally have a hyperextended thumb from using a Nexus 6 and an iPhone 7 Plus for the last couple of years. And I, you know, I said it is literally painful, right? And so I said I want a smaller phone, so I'm not constantly hyperextending my left thumb, which is the way I tend to use it. You know, my right hand's usually free doing something else, and my phone's in my left hand. Why did you go with the smaller phone? Since, you know, everybody seems to think the bigger one is better, although I don't see any major difference myself.
Mainly the lower price. Basically, the $649 that I paid for this is probably pushing the high end of what I really feel comfortable paying for a smartphone.
I hear you.
I know that a lot of people are willing to spend north of that, up to $1,000 if you get an iPhone X or iPhone 10, I should say. But that's the primary reason. I also, I had been using a Nexus 6P, which is a 6-inch phone, and got used to that. But really had preferred a smaller phone before I bought that. So this was kind of nice to go back to a 5-inch screen. Mm-hmm. I was a little worried, actually, that the 5-inch screen would seem to be too small. And it is small compared to the 6P. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't taken too much to get reacquainted to the smaller size screen. And plenty good. Very happy with the size of it. You know, carrying it around in your pants pocket, that type of thing is much more comfortable.
Yeah. And as I keep telling people here in Hawaii, for whatever reason, the people who design Aloha shirts put pockets on Aloha shirts that are smaller than our you know, shirts that you might typically buy in the mainland, you know, whether it's a dress shirt or if it has a pocket, or a, you know, regular work shirt or whatever. So these large phones simply don't fit well in Aloha shirts. It's a real problem, you know, in terms of convenience. So I'm glad to have a slightly smaller phone that is, I wouldn't call it tiny. It's certainly bigger than iPhone 4 and Nexus 4 and whatever other phones have preceded it. So I'm pretty happy. John, you still happy with the iPhone 10?
I've been pretty happy with it. It's going on a little over 2 weeks now that I've had it.
Yeah.
And it just, it seems pretty natural. I'm surprised how quickly I've picked up the little gestures and everything else to abandon my love of the home button, I guess. It wasn't as necessary as I thought. Face ID is still fast. Yeah, I can't really say too much other than really in the last week and a half, I've really hit this productivity high in a sense, mixing and matching the iPhone, the iPad Pro, and then either the Surface Pro or the MacBook, whatever I'm working on, to kind of find the right and wrong. So now that I walk around campus, usually always with the iPad Pro and Surface Pro's docked at my desk, it seems like actually a really nice combination for the first time, I guess, ever.
Which iPad Pro are you using? I don't know why I just noticed that. The big one?
The 10.5. One that you have, the one that we just both purchased over the last year.
Yeah, okay. And speaking of Apple, I was not planning to buy a HomePod. Probably, I'm going to guess Frank wasn't either. He's not really a Apple ecosphere person. But John, were you going to buy a HomePod?
Nope, I really didn't have any desire for one, but I thought it was interesting. But it's going to be a while before we all see them in the light of day, it seems.
Yeah, so a bunch of people are reporting that a HomePod won't be available until early 2018. So Apple's going to completely miss the holiday gift buying season. It probably won't hurt them too much in the bottom line. I mean, it's not like they missed an iPhone shipment. That would have killed them. But no HomePod for you this Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever holiday you celebrate this time of the year. And we haven't even hit Thanksgiving yet, and we're talking about it, right? Black Friday's coming up. Speaking of Black Friday, you know, I was just listening to This Week in Google, I think, Twig. And it didn't occur to me that even though, you know, in the U.S., Black Friday is Black Friday because it's the biggest shopping day of the year, which most people take the day off after Thanksgiving if they don't have it, U.S. Thanksgiving. But I understand in Canada and the U.K. and other places, Black Friday is now a thing, even though they obviously don't observe U.S. Thanksgiving. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Okay, next up is it's a real short item, but I just found it fascinating. So it turns out that Microsoft doesn't own the Microsoft Office Equation Editor. It was developed by a third party, and not only was it developed by a third party, but Microsoft doesn't own access to the source code for it. So when they had to patch it recently, they had to patch the binary, which I found incredibly amusing. I mean, somebody should be asking why they didn't buy access to the source code or, you know, perpetual licensing or whatever it is.
Well, there's also the possibility that they lost the source code. I mean, this hasn't been patched in 17 years.
Something like that.
It's quite possible. I mean, I don't have the source code to software I wrote 17 years ago. So, yeah, if you gave me a shareware app that I had made in 1999, which there are a few of them floating around still on the internet because some of those old file repositories just never die, yeah, I wouldn't be able to do much with it. In fact, I don't even think I could generate a license code if anyone wants to buy it anymore. So it's, yeah, that's, I think, what they ran into. I don't think that they don't have it. I think that they lost it.
Well, the other story that, you know, we're burying apparently is that if you were a purchaser of one of John's shareware and you need a patch, so sorry. That's not going to happen.
The ones of people who purchased it are not going to get a patch.
Okay.
I don't have Borland Delphi installed and able to open the source code and repatch it and recompile it. Sorry.
That is hilarious. Borland Delphi. Okay, another short one, I think, is, I guess I should ask Frank what he did before I say bad things. Frank, did you buy the Google Pixel Buds?
No.
Okay, good. Now I can say bad things. So I for one, you know, I was really tempted to buy the Google Pixel Buds, which I think are $169, or thereabouts, $159, $169, about the same price as, Apple's AirPods. And I said, I just can't bring myself to spend that much money on a pair of earbuds. And I guess I'm glad I didn't, because the reviews that are coming out about it are really not positive. I'll read you a bunch, but it being four subject lines from review articles from The Verge. Google Pixel Buds review: the future shouldn't be this awkward. Fortune Magazine: Google Pixel Buds review roundup, the good and the ugly. Popular Science, Google Pixel Buds review, the best wireless headphones I've ever wanted to throw in the river. And USA Today, Google Pixel Buds, real-time translation, not much comfort. So, I think saying it's a mixed bag of reviews is an underwhelming understatement. It's sort of like, based on the, at least the critics review, although people seem to like it, Justice League the movie, meh. You know? I should say
so. I haven't read any of those reviews, but I get the impression that the software works okay, but people are having issues with the actual physical design.
Right, and the fact of for example, the Bluetooth earbuds cannot pair with more than one device simultaneously, and by that I mean, you know, let's say you have a tablet and a Chromebook and a phone. You know, all Google products, let's say, or anything, right? And you just want to pair the earbuds with all three, depending which one you're using. You can't do it. You have to reset it, and apparently, which is a torturous task of putting it back into the charging case, which apparently is also very difficult to do. So much, apparently, that there's videos on YouTube to show you how to put it back in a case because it's so difficult. And then you have to unpair it and repair it with the next one. And then if you... Let's say, you know, you have what's it called? A Pixelbook? Their Chromebook? And you pair that, then you want to go to phone, you got to go through this, you know, rigmarole, and then go backwards, same thing, unpair, repair. It's, you know, when a $25 or $30 pair of Bluetooth earbuds can be paired with more than one device, I think a $160 device should be able to do so, too. So...
Yeah, it just seemed like all the review roundups I read were review roundups that compared Pixel Buds to AirPods.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, yeah, Pixel Buds, they're okay. AirPods, they're really great. Pixel Buds, yeah, they're good, I guess. It's a lackluster sort of reaction. Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's a fair comparison. I mean, they're approximately the same price. And they, you know, are approximately the same function. And, you know, they're both come from gigantic companies. I think it's fair to compare the two products. The big deal about it was the translation aspect, right? That you can hear the translation in the earbuds. And it's presumably easier than just doing it on a phone. I mean, you don't really need the earbuds to do the translation from one language to another. But even that is like, you know, and honestly, for the vast majority of users, how many times do you really need real-time translation? You know, how many times a week do you need real-time translation? You know, unless you are, I don't know what, you know, you have some kind of unusual job or live in an unusual place. I live in Hawaii where, you know, where are lots and lots of different languages, and I don't even feel the need for it, to be honest.
Yeah, I would expect that first of all, the fast pairing, if it worked well with multiple devices in the initial setup, would be obviously an appeal, because setting up Bluetooth devices can still be a bit of a pain. Mm-hmm. And the interaction with Google Assistant would be an appeal. I would guess that, I mean, my initial reaction when I first heard them is it was not positive just when I saw them announced because of how they looked. I mean, I don't like the type of headsets that they are, where they kind of sit, you know, they don't go into the ear canal. Right, they kind of sit on the outside.
Right.
They tend to pop out of my ear very quickly.
Right.
So I that was a non-starter. But I think if you compare the AirPods to these Pixel Buds, I think you have the biggest or the most clear example of the difference between Apple and Google. Apple is very much a hardware company that spends a lot of time making very good hardware and works to make the software work well with hardware. But at the end of the day, it's all about the hardware working very well and easy for a user. Where with Google, it's really all about software and connectivity to the internet. And it would appear that in first blush that they just kind of took looks like regular Bluetooth type headset and tried to craft their software onto it, and you end up with kind of a meh product because it's not really designed from the beginning to be completely integrated and work very well together.
And really, except for the translation, there's nothing special about them.
One of the things I thought was interesting as I was preparing for our podcast tonight was looking over our old podcasts, and there have been two products that Apple has put out in the last 3 years that critics were extremely sort of negative on until they came out, and then they were a successful product, and the critics have largely, with one of them, decided to use it as the standard, and the other, I think the critics are still begrudgingly accepting. And the one that they turned around quickest on was AirPods.
Okay.
That was the one that when it was announced, you know, all the jokes about, well, people are going to be losing them all the time. That's going to be a big problem. They're not going to work that well, et cetera. And now it seems like AirPods have become the standard bearer for a premium Bluetooth headset offering by a company to pair with their devices.
I think that's fair.
The other device that I think is really interesting to watch the turnaround on was the Apple Watch.
Ah.
You know, we had a podcast back in March of 2015 where I was asking, you know, why do people hate the Apple Watch so much? It had just been announced. And I think the critics have just almost in the last 6 months started to accept the Apple Watch as a success. But there was a lot of negativity around, well, we don't need wearables. I think a lot of geeks were just of the opinion, well, wearables have always been a niche. They'll always be a niche. All I need is my phone.
Right. Don't get me started on the spot watch.
I won't. But I still am amazed over the last 3 years that in the last 6 months, there is not a day that goes by that I don't see at least three other Apple Watches other than my own.
I have to say, I'm also shocked to see that, let's call them civilians, that I see civilians wearing Apple Watches. I mean, lots of them.
And you're seeing civilians in a state capital of a state that is a very expensive state to live in.
Yeah.
I'm seeing these on students who are going to school in one of the poorest parts of the entire country in the Mississippi Delta. It is really shocking to me to see the level of technology adoption that I have seen here, because I also see other things that don't get adopted. You know, unlike other places I've taught, not all of my students have laptops. Mm-hmm. Not all of my students even have good smartphones. A lot of them are on the, you know, cheapest smartphone they could get a hold of. So to see that many Apple Watches, it really is shocking to me, especially on students.
Hmm. Yeah, I have to say, I would say that in general about students, but I guess students aren't as poor as I used to be when I went to school. That's my theory, at least.
Well, you know, they don't have to buy the stone tablets and
those things are not just expensive, they're heavy.
Yeah.
And then storing them.
Yeah. Especially in the cold, you know, they could just break.
Yeah.
Shatter.
Now, did I recall correctly that the iPhone X had to get a firmware upgrade recently to work in a cold?
Yes, that came out 2-3 days ago. Cold. And I'm planning on driving to Pennsylvania this week for Thanksgiving, so I figured I'd better apply it to my iPhone X, which I have. So.
Well, Frank and I don't have to worry about that because we're using Pixels. And we're using the good Pixel, the Pixel 2, not the one with the wacky screen and all kinds of other problems.
The 2XL. The one made by HTC.
Right.
Not the one made by LG.
Right. Yeah. So LG makes the 2XL and HTC makes the 2. No XL.
HTC is probably the saddest story in the last 10 years, where they are a device manufacturer that consistently makes good devices and exciting devices and just can't get traction anywhere under their name anymore.
Well, I would say they are second to Nokia. I mean, in all seriousness, you know, and with much regard for the former Nokia employees, of which there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, they made some very fine products for very many long years. And, you know, I remember holding a Nokia S60 type device and comparing it to my then Windows Mobile phone edition and thinking, man, I wish it had this kind of stuff on my phone, you know, but, you know, it had a camera before we had. It had It had video. It had, you know, it did all kinds of stuff that our phones didn't do. In fact, I had to go borrow one when I did a chapter for digital photography tricks. The old O'Reilly. What was it called? Hacks. Digital photography hacks. I did a couple of articles for that book, or entries, chapters of that book, I guess it's called.
That actually, come to think of it, that's making me sad, because I really loved that O'Reilly series, and then they killed it off. So.
Yeah, well, like a lot of things. I mean, they just had a mass, you know, downsizing a bunch of years ago.
I was going to say that the, you know, HTC's, when they've been most successful, it would appear, is when they've been really just a OEM for another company. You know, they were, as I recall, had some contribution to the Palm 5. Obviously, the original, I think the compact iPack, they had some involvement there.
I think so, too.
And so, you know, they're now with their relationship with Google, and it'll be interesting to see whether in the coming forward years, if there's, you know, how that continues, if at all. But it shows probably their weakness has been in the marketing area, in their ability to not just advertise, but probably to understand the markets that you're trying to sell in. And their strength, obviously, has been in maybe design and some manufacturing in support of other companies. So given that history, though, that gives them a possibility to stick around longer, because they can continue to produce devices for other companies and have those relationships, where Nokia kind of was an all-in of themselves type of thing, and really, you know, kind of went out of business, literally, at least from the phone stuff, and basically obviously sold to Microsoft. Right. And the Nokia actually that we know of today is actually some other company that's really the brand they got transferred over the rights to, and company basically uses the branding, but it's really not exactly the same company that you're referring to, Todd, back in the day.
Yeah, it seemed like it's like AT&T. AT&T is not the AT&T we, you know, it's really Southwestern Bell with stuff added to it. But it's really interesting because, you know, for a long time when I was a Windows Mobile phone user, I had a string of HTC devices because I really love their stuff. The Dash, is that the one with the little keyboard, kind of the Palm Trio look-alike thing?
Yep.
That was awesome. I thought it had a great keyboard. It was a great phone, great size, great everything. The HD7, which I think had the pull-down keyboard, which was awesome. They just had a lot of phones that I bought.
Well, I think at one time they were the, if you will, the premier Windows Mobile or Windows Phone manufacturer. They had a good relationship with Microsoft. In fact, people, Todd, you and I know, went on to work with HTC and in that marketing area, and, you know, are no longer working with them because they pulled back in their ability to market within the United States. But I mean, there was a period of time there between the Palm and the Pocket PC Windows Mobile time where HTC was definitely one of the leading manufacturers in these mobile devices, and that to a certain extent into the Android area. But with Android, they decided to try to be their own kind of, you know, go off on their own and sell their own brand. And that's been much more difficult for them.
Yeah.
HTC does really well when another company will take any loss of profit. So HTC is okay if you say, I'm company X, I want to buy devices from you at this price. I'll sell them for whatever price the market will bear. And then if it's a success, that's cool. If not, I can write it off because I also have the vested interest in the software, in the marketplace, and all those places. So Google, for example, can sell the Pixel 2 at a loss because they'll get revenue back from marketplace purchases and ad revenue from their products. So HTC does well when they don't have to worry about profitability. They have to worry about profitability, they get in trouble.
I was going to say, any company will do well if they don't have to worry about profitability.
I'll say it easier than that. They don't have to worry too much when the profitability story is pretty simple.
Yeah.
Sell devices for this much. This is how much we need to make to be profitable. But when you put in those unknowns of consumers won't buy at that price, so you have to lower the price, and how do you lower the price but make up for it later, they had nowhere else to make up for it.
Yeah.
Well, on the other side, what you might really be getting at, John, is the customer is different, right? If Google is your customer, then Google is going to buy a quantity of your product, and it's going to be an upfront purchase, and you kind of know how much you're selling and what your cash flow is going to be. If you're out there on your own and your customer is actually end consumers, then that's a whole nother beast of understanding in which parts of the world people are going to buy your product and how much to manufacture at any point in time. And that can make you go bankrupt very quickly if you, you know, make more of a product than you can sell.
Like Nokia.
It sort of makes me wonder if when HTC expanded to the North American market and the European market, I know they were very hesitant to ever put anything outside of Taiwan, outside of home turf. And I wonder if they just had people who are very smart knowing the Asian market, not that well versed in how the Europe and the North American market were going to receive them.
Well, this relationship with Google, I still don't quite understand. So HTC, the company, still exists. So right. It was really an acqui-hire of just the phone side of HTC, right?
Some of the designers that do the design work basically gone off to work for Google. I think there may have been some intellectual property that at least Google licensed. I mean, obviously the squeeze gesture they used to initiate the assistant on the Pixel 2 XL, is an HTC piece of intellectual property that Google's obviously taken advantage of. So that's probably the key things there. Probably just plain access to experienced hardware designers that actually have relationships with the manufacturer,
yeah,
which is something Google really didn't have, particularly after they sold off Motorola.
Right. Well, I've had a couple. I think the Nexus 1 was an HTC device. That was a pretty good device. I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
Although it kind of pooped out in resources really quickly, which is a little bit disappointing. The 4. Who made the Nexus 4? Was that another HTC or was that an LG?
I think that was
Samsung.
Yeah.
Was that Samsung 4?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, there was the Samsung Galaxy. It was the Nexus Galaxy. The Nexus 4 might have been an LG.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. I'm looking it up.
Yeah, Nexus 4 was an LG.
Okay.
So, yeah, because there was the middle one. There was the Nexus 1 was an HTC. The Nexus S and the Nexus Galaxy were Samsung. And then the Nexus 4 was LG.
Okay. All righty. I don't know if we've got other stuff. One last thing I wanted to mention, and we can circle back to other stuff if you like. One last thing I want to mention is I found kind of interesting, and that's Codeweaver's crossover for Chromebooks is now in beta apparently. And for those who remember crossover, it lets you run Windows apps. I shouldn't say run Windows apps. Some Windows apps on Linux boxes. It's not quite an emulator. It has some hooks for specific applications to let them run under Linux. And since Chrome OS is essentially Linux, they've got a beta that lets you, I think it's about $40 when it becomes available for purchase, that runs on Chromebooks. So you can run some Windows apps on Chromebooks. Personally, I don't care about doing that. So, but I, you know, for those people who are, there you go. You can someday if that's what you need to do. But remember, you won't be able to run all the Windows apps, just the ones that it supports.
I bet it can run that 17-year-old equation editor.
Yeah, exactly. I think eventually it's supposed to run Microsoft Office, for example, but I think the beta currently doesn't support it. Interesting idea. You know, one of the things I found out that was really, and I've mentioned it before here, is that when I finally bought a Chromebook, and John and I have been talking about this for years now, and I finally pulled the trigger earlier this year to buy the Samsung Chromebook Plus, I finally bought it because Samsung Chromebook Plus was the first Chromebook that came out of the box supporting Android app use without running the Chromebook OS beta. And so I bought it. I've been very happy with it. The big surprise to me is that I rarely use Android apps on my Chromebook. There's just almost no need for it. I won't say there's no need for it, but there's almost no need for it. I would say the only two apps I run regularly on my Chromebook that are Android apps are Google's movie/TV video app, because I subscribe to some TV shows on Google Play that I share with my daughter that I've mentioned using their family plan. And more recently, there was something else I was running as an app, but I just can't see. I can't even think what it is now. Tried Evernote. Evernote is terrible, terrible, terrible on a Chromebook, unfortunately, as an app. The website is okay. So, the other thing I wanted to mention, I don't have in our show notes, but apparently Windows on ARM devices are supposed to show up in a couple of weeks. Any interest from either of you?
Nah.
Meh. Meh.
Just curious to see if they do have better luck doing it this time than they did with the Surface RT.
Well, I think the biggest difference is that Windows on ARM is supposed to have some kind of a emulator or whatever to let you run Windows 32 apps on it. So it would, at least that was the biggest problem with RT, is that it was useless.
Windows RT, the best operating system you can't do anything on.
Yeah. I still have mine, by the way. I still have that turkey. It was the worst. How much did I spend on that turkey? I think it was $650 for the device, and I had to spend $100 and some odd for the gosh awful velvety feeling touch keyboard, and it was so unusable that I had to go buy the type cover. I think there's a touch cover and a type cover. I ordered the touch cover. It was unusable to me. I had to like pound it, you know, with a hammer to get any key to work. So I bought the type cover, which is actually a good keyboard. But RT never went anywhere. I could never run any apps I needed. You know, I was stuck using Internet Explorer. I couldn't use Chrome. To me, that's the same problem with Windows 10S, by the way, is that you're stuck with Microsoft Edge, which is a terrible, terrible browser.
It's really funny to me how Microsoft keeps insisting. There's someone at Microsoft who keeps going, you know what? All those apps that people love, they don't need them anymore. We'll just keep pushing out these operating systems where you can't run them. People are going to abandon them. No problem. Yeah. They did that with Windows Phone, various incarnations of it. They did that with Windows RT, Windows 10S. There's one guy there that must have very good blackmail evidence on everyone else, so he can't be fired.
I think his name is Bill.
Yeah, he's just the zealot that, you know what? All the stuff that we've built over the last 25 years, people don't want to use it anymore.
No. I mean, I remember going from Windows Mobile 6 to Windows Phone 7 and not being able to run a single app. And it was that point I said, you know what? I don't think I really need this Windows Phone thing anymore. If I can't even run the apps that made Windows Mobile useful, like eWallet.
I remember writing a book on Windows Phone 7, and I couldn't even get screenshots off the device.
Oh, that's right.
So I had to take pictures of a device and then do photo editing to try to get usable images for the book, because they didn't have a screenshot that I could use at that point to meet the deadline for the book.
It was just a brain-dead operating system. Hey, by the way, I want to start a rumor. I want to start, you know, I have a couple of rumors that I want to start, right? But so, and they're based off the alleged or long rumored Surface Phone devices that, you know, probably will never come out. So instead of a Surface 4, I first postured or offered the idea of a Quantum phone. Microsoft Quantum phone. Because, you know, Microsoft is all into quantum now, right? Quantum computing and all of that. But I have a much better name for the next Windows-based phone. And I think we should call the next Microsoft phone Next of Kin. Anyway, just throwing it out.
You've been thinking on that really long and hard, haven't you?
Well, it just came to me one day, actually. Next of Kin. I like it.
Well, we'll know who to notify when it dies too.
Hey, I'm offering it to Microsoft for free. You know, the marketing would be awesome, right? This is your next of kin. You know, we've got some news for you. You know,
hey, you remember that phone that we sold for 3 months, like 7 years ago?
Yeah.
You want something like that again? Here it is.
See, I don't think the interesting question is, does Microsoft really need a phone?
I don't think so personally.
I think it's interesting. And in second, if they decided they want to sell a phone, do they need to actually make their own operating system, or could they do something like Amazon does, where you build off the core of Android and you put your own twist to it and sell it? I mean, there are articles and people who take Microsoft's Android products, and they've got everything from the launcher to Cortana to Edge that's coming out for Android as well, that you can, for in all practical purposes, make a Microsoft phone using Android. And so, you know, getting stuff right out of the Play Store. So it wouldn't be that much of a stretch to do like Amazon did and just start with the base Android OS that's open sourced and put all those parts on it, get somebody to manufacture a phone for you, and there you go.
Yeah,
so it wouldn't be Windows. It would be a very untypical thing for Microsoft to do, because it wouldn't have their software at the core operating system.
Right.
But you could still have all your products, particularly Edge, where, you know, the Office type products that are out there, if you know, and in the end, that's what people use anyways, right? I mean, that's what would make a Microsoft phone a Microsoft phone.
Well, you know, Microsoft still owns the technologies for Andy Ruman's first phone, the Danger. So Danger OS. So they could have a pre-Android fork of Danger and create their own phone out of that, I suppose.
Well, they would probably have their hardware guy. I'm his name's escaping me. The guy that does all the Surface stuff, you know, just come up with their engineers, obviously, that can do the hardware design, probably come up with something for them, and then contract with HTC or somebody to manufacture it, or just go straight to Foxconn.
Yeah, I think the only problem is really the most reasonable platform for them to use is Android.
Right.
And I don't think Microsoft would do that. I mean, it's possible.
I think Microsoft would be wise doing would be, right now Microsoft has a ton of apps in both iOS and in the Google Play Store. Have the Microsoft phone app. You download it. You open it up. It says, hey, here are all the apps we have. Select the ones you want. Select this maybe wallpaper that, you know, is a Windows wallpaper, and maybe this ringtone that's a Windows ringtone, whatever you want to do. Customize this however Microsofty you want. Hit this button, and then it just downloads and installs all the things you selected.
I think that'd be pretty reasonable.
And then you can hit iOS and Android and call it a day.
Yeah. I think it'd be... It'd be practical for Microsoft to simply do what they're kind of already doing. That's adopting Android as their base mobile platform. And I've heard some articles recently, however, that, you know, Office doesn't run well in Oreo and things. I really haven't tried it, so I don't know. But I think it'd be reasonable to just continue with this, making the best possible mobile apps they can for mostly Android and some iPhone. And it does seem like things come out for Android first, from Microsoft at least. And then, you know, taking it over from there, because I just think it's too late for them to be a mobile platform.
Well, I would be inclined to agree with you, except for the fact that they came out with the laptop.
The Surface, yeah.
You know, yeah, and it's like, why come out with a laptop? You know, you can make the same arguments for not doing a laptop, that you're fine with the Surface Book and the Surface mm-hmm. Pro mm-hmm. line. Those had some unique things about them, mm-hmm. but then they, you know, announced the laptop. So it would appear that somebody at Microsoft is convinced that they need to have a product line, not just one or two things, but an entire line, in which case a phone is a logical part of that. You know, as would be a Cortana equivalent to Echo or Google Home.
Well, there is the Harman Kardon, right? Has a.
It's not a Microsoft, you know, Surface-y, you know, type of thing, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it just, you know, I was surprised that they did. I mean, obviously they did that Alcantara thing the design. It gave it something unique.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's an Ultrabook. It's not, you know, and so they jumped into that. So makes you wonder.
Hey, before I forget, Frank, again, not on the show notes, but since you also ordered a pre-ordered a Pixel 2, I assume, did you get the deal for the free Google Home Mini?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, I got my notification today to go ahead and order it.
Okay.
So I just ordered mine today. I have no idea what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah.
But
I ordered.
One, I'll take it.
I ordered mine yesterday, so we should probably get them around the same time. I'm really looking forward to it. One of the things I want to have it do is talk to my Echo. And, you know, have the Echo and the Google Home Mini have a conversation and see how long it goes before they give up. That said, I also heard, but have not verified, that on Black Friday, the normally $50 Google Home Mini is going to be like $20 or something. So, not as good as free, which is what we, I guess you could say not really free. We paid a lot of money for our phones. But I thought it was a good addition to, you know, to buying a phone. So I'm looking forward to having a Google Home Mini to play. And I understand it's a lot smarter than, you know, the Amazon Echo. And certainly everything's smarter than the Siri. So,
well, and it can still be used as a full-scale speakerphone.
I mean,
basically, you can use it to make regular phone calls as opposed to Echo, where you're doing a Echo-to-Echo device calling type of thing.
Right.
So that would have a certain appeal, I think, or at least a usability factor for it. You know, they're nice looking little devices. I mean, I'm interested to see, you know, get mine, see what it looks like. But, you know, I have the Home, which has been sufficient. And if I start placing these things more places in my house, I think my wife's going to have an issue. So I have one of the Echo dots upstairs in the living room.
Yeah.
Where you know, so I have one on two floors.
I do too. I do
the yeah, the top floor where the bedrooms are is off limits to technology. So the most tech I have up there are some Hue lights.
That's pretty funny. But anyway, I'm looking forward to my Google Home Mini too, and maybe we can chat about that when we both get them. I did. Oh, and I don't know if you've tried this yet, but I tried it the other day. If you squeeze to activate Google Assistant on your Pixel 2 or Pixel 2 XL, you can say take a selfie, and it'll take a selfie. And it's you think, well, that's kind of stupid, isn't it? Just as easy to press a button. It turns out no, it's actually easier, because it's with my hyperextended painful thumb, it's actually kind of painful to, you know, to kind of stick your arm out there and you have a bunch of friends or something and try to aim it. If you take a selfie, you can just sort of hold it gingerly and it counts down 3, 2, 1 and boom, it takes a pretty nice selfie. So for those of you who are selfie fans, it's a pretty a lot handier feature than I expected of the Pixel 2. And I'm also pleasantly surprised to say that the squeeze to activate feature hasn't been going off too much accidentally. I do activate it accidentally daily, but not as often as I thought it'd be activating it like every 5 seconds. But that has not happened, so I'm pretty happy with it. And as John is pretty happy with the Face ID, I'm still pretty happy with the fingerprint ID on the Pixel 2. John, did you see the article in Wired where the 10-year-old boy was able to unlock his mother's phone?
I did see that. I'm interested to see where that goes. I assume Google is interested in patching, or Android or Apple is interested in patching that.
And, you know, here's the other thing I thought about. You know, when I think the Apple's decision to go to Face ID and foregoing fingerprint ID in the 10, they said, well, actually, you know, it is more likely that two people have similar enough fingerprints to activate the same phone than the same face, but the difference is it's not obvious which two people have similar fingerprints. Where it's pretty obvious if you have the same face, you know? So if you have an evil twin, your evil twin knows, you know, I look a lot like my good twin, you know, sibling. I can probably unlock his or her phone. Not true with fingerprints. It'd be a wild guess. I think my fingerprint is the same as John. So let me try to unlock his phone with my fingerprint.
That is true. You know who to keep your phone away from.
although I did think it was pretty funny that a 10-year-old boy could unlock his mom's phone. But fortunately for his mom, the boy's face will probably change as he hits puberty and things enough that I probably won't unlock the phone anymore. But the dangers of making assumptions about security. Okay, anything else from you guys? At this point, I'm waiting for a Google Home Mini to arrive. Oh, I did want to mention one more thing. Speaking of the earbuds we were talking about earlier. So I'm still unwilling to pay $160 for a pair of earbuds, but I was willing to pay about $35 for a wireless Bluetooth earbuds, you know, kind of like the AirPod, no cable between the two headphones. I tried to order it from Amazon. I got an email a couple of days after the order, it wasn't immediate, saying, oh, I'm sorry, we can't ship these to Hawaii. And because, you know, the lithium ion battery, we're talking earbuds. It's got a tiny pair of batteries. I've been trying to track down what the problem is. Somebody said, who was it? One of our friends, I think it was David Shear, said that he had spoken to a vendor. No, sorry, it was another friend of mine locally who said he had spoken to a vendor about why they couldn't ship it to Hawaii and spoke to Amazon. And Amazon told him, oh, it was a state regulation. So, I've been tracking it down in the state government, and nobody in the state government, I've gone up pretty high, can figure out where this alleged regulation Amazon is quoting comes from. Because we don't think the state has the authority to make that regulation. It's probably a federal regulation. You know, somebody like the FAA to, you know, prevent dangerous goods from being shipped via the air, that sort of thing. But more importantly, I saw I think it was in a Reddit discussion or something, somebody was talking to Anker, A-N-K-E-R, I think one of our favorite accessories maker these days. Mm-hmm. Anker apparently told him that what is happening is in order to ship via Amazon on air, and you know, almost everything comes to Hawaii via air, you have to certify that your lithium ion based product, you know, like earbuds or whatever, will be at 30% or less battery capacity when it's shipped. And since, you know, that entails extra cost, blah, 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 nobody wants to do it, they simply don't certify and Amazon won't ship it to Hawaii. And I think that's pretty reasonable because some things do ship to Hawaii. And it's also reasonable not to want to. I did a quick check. They also won't ship to Alaska. It's only the contiguous lower 48, as we used to call it when I lived in Alaska. But at any rate.
There aren't any more of us, so it's still the lower 48.
The total population of Alaska and Hawaii combined is 0.65% of the United States. In other words, combined, the two states don't account for 1% of the population of the U.S. So there is no financial reason for most companies to take on the added cost of making these kind of certifications in order to sell, you know, a minuscule amount of additional sales. So, unfortunately, I am not ordered to purchase and have shipped my $35 earbuds. I may just have it sent to my daughter in Maine.
And unfortunately, nobody in the lower 48 feels sorry for anybody in Hawaii at any time.
Well, you guys are just terrible people.
Yeah,
that's all I can say. You're terrible, terrible people.
We aspire to take vacations to Hawaii, and so we just...
Well, you know, maybe there's a business.
Roses and good thoughts and now Hawaiian shirts.
You have given me really a business idea. We can have an Airbnb air cargo. So if you're flying to Hawaii, we will pay you $50 to carry a bunch of stuff in your luggage to deliver in Hawaii.
Well, you know, actually, Todd, Amazon is, I just read an article where I think Amazon is doing something like the model that Uber is using with some of their shipments and getting people to deliver it. And in fact,
Amazon Express.
I may have a package showing up tomorrow on Sunday as we record this that I think is being shipped that way. I ordered a piece of luggage on Thursday.
Wow.
And the tracking number is, it's saying it's shipped with AMZL US.
Hmm.
And there's a tracking ID. I don't recognize it. It's not a UPS or a USPS or a FedEx number.
Right, right.
So I have no idea who's going to deliver this thing. Of course, I probably won't see who delivers it because they just dropped the package off at my front door and run away. But it's interesting that, you know, I could, you know, there are distribution centers all over the country now.
Right.
I could see where if somebody wanted to, you know, had a pickup truck or a van or something
right.
and wanted a side business to pick up stuff and run around all over the place dropping it off for the holidays. And I would guess if anybody could figure out a way to save some money or make money off the deal, it would be Amazon.
Yeah, I just read about something. I think it's called Amazon Express. I think it's been in operation for about 2 years now. And these are stringers. These are like Uber or Lyft drivers, except instead of picking up and delivering people, they pick up and deliver packages. Not sure what the legality of it is or how Amazon guarantees that they're honest and blah, 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 because certainly Uber doesn't do that. You know, it's an interesting. I will look forward to having you back on soon, Frank, so you can tell us what the experience was like and what kind of label was on it and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's, you know, like, what's their distribution point for these stringers? You know, there's delivery stringers.
Well, I get, you know, again, you know, I live in the metropolitan Detroit area.
Yeah.
And over the course of this past summer, they've expanded and built warehouses, you know, distribution centers for them, basically.
Yeah.
In the area and some of the communities in the area. So they are close enough now that I could see where, you know, you just, you know, if you're going to do this type of work, that you go to this location and pick
right.
up X number of packages
right.
and, you know, but you're right. I mean, essentially you're what, a contractor or something?
Yeah.
But,
yeah. You're not
you
an
know.
Amazon employee, according to the article I read. Hey, do either of you have an Amazon locker near you? I don't know if I do, by the way. I don't think so.
I haven't been to the Whole Foods that's near me yet. Were they going to be putting them in Whole Foods as well? Or
I don't know, but that would be a wonderful idea. I know John and I discussed that a couple of weeks back, that it would be awesome if they put Amazon lockers in Whole Foods. I have one less than 5 miles from me. So it'd be very, very, very convenient.
I have one less than 100 miles from me.
Is it the same place the Apple Store is?
Yeah, pretty much.
And the Starbucks, the closest Starbucks,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. They're all in the same spot, about 98 miles away.
Yeah. By the way, my daughter, who, you know, did not have a nearby Starbucks near her college campus, which I know sounds, you know, blasphemous for the 4 years she was an undergrad, found when she went back to grad school, same school, that they now have a Starbucks nearby, so she's pretty happy. So she is one up on you, John. She's got a nearby
yep.
Starbucks. No Apple
Very
Store,
true.
Though. No Apple Store. And no Whole Foods, I think. It's a very small town. Okay, that's about all I got. John, Frank, you got anything to add?
No.
Okay, well, I want to thank Frank for joining us for what I thought was going to be a short podcast. And here we are 58 minutes into the podcast. As usual, we had a lot more fun than we ever anticipate.
I did note in our show notes that the first Mobile Views podcast
uh-huh.
was not 58 minutes. Did
yeah,
you see? Yeah.
Yeah.
15 minutes and 50 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. And also the sound quality was terrible and all kinds of other problems. But, you know, you learn stuff over the years. I have gone from, I think I just used my earbuds and they weren't, I didn't know how to make a mono, or I didn't realize I needed to make it a mono audio. So there's like only like on one channel. You know, really a lot of stupid stuff I had to learn over the first, you know, 10 or 12 podcasts. But yeah, 9 years. I didn't think this podcast would last that long. And I guess I should thank my podcasting service for keeping their prices reasonable. I don't think they've raised their price on me since I started. So thanks for that. And they have increased the resources. So I don't know, Frank Remy. Oh, you know, one of the reasons it was under, it was very short. I think I could only I could only upload up to 30 megabytes of audio files per file. So I couldn't have a podcast longer than, you know, like 25 minutes or something like that back in the old days. So I had a lot of limitations that really isn't a problem these days. In any case, I hope to see you guys soon. Hope to hear back from Frank and have him back on a podcast talking about however the heck he got his luggage delivered to him tomorrow on Sunday, which I'm jealous. Even Frank here in Hawaii, even Saturday delivery is, I guess we have enough time. I'll tell this story. So when the first iPad came out, I pre-ordered it like most people, and it was scheduled for a Saturday delivery all across the U.S. I think it was like, I don't know, April 4th or something like that, 2010. And I got an email from Apple on April Fool's Day, April 1st. And I thought it was a joke saying, I got it from UPS saying, I'm sorry, we're sorry, but we can't deliver your product on April 4th, Saturday, because Hawaii does not have UPS delivery on Saturday. And then I got an email from Apple on the same, you know, about an hour later saying, you know, we're sorry, the product you pre-ordered cannot be delivered because UPS does not have Saturday delivery in Hawaii. And so I sent an email. I just needed to vent. I didn't think it would do any good. I sent an email to steve@apple.com. and then I said, oh, okay, I got it off my chest. I'll go figure out what to do. And, you know, I think I was either a full-time blogger or whatever at the time, and I needed to have an iPad to review. And of course, I wasn't, you know, famous or anything, so nobody was going to give me one. My wife happened to be working at home or was waiting for something to be delivered home. She was home that day instead of the office on April 1st. And soon after I sent my email, she calls me and says, I got a call from somebody at Apple who says they're calling from Steve Jobs' office and they want to talk to you. And so I called the number she gave me, and they said, we just got your email. We're very sorry. You know, how can we fix this and all this, that, and the other thing? And they arranged for me to pick up an iPad. The pre-orders were sold out, right? There were no, like, freestanding iPads available. So we'll arrange for you to have one at the local Apple store of your choice. And so I went down, and it says, go ask for this person at that Apple store, and she will take care of you. And that's exactly what happened. They were walking down the line. There were, you know, like thousands of us in line. And I said, oh, you know, I don't really have that number you're looking for, but I'm told to ask this person to help me. Tell them this is my name. And they come back, oh, yes. We have instructions to help you out. It was kind of
amazing. It's your brush with Steve.
I know. Okay. It gets better.
And you still want us to feel sorry about those Bluetooth headphones you couldn't get shipped.
Okay, wait, the story gets better. I come home, there's another iPad at my doorstep. It turns out that Apple had forced UPS to make the deliveries in Hawaii so that everybody in Hawaii could get it the same time as everybody else in the U.S. So I had two iPads. I was able to sell one, but it was pretty hilarious. Anyway, wow. That is my brush with greatness story.
All of a sudden, Todd's not getting all that sympathy, not being able to ship over lithium-ion batteries and into paradise.
We couldn't even get... My wife was trying to order the cinnamon-flavored rice milk horchata something, something, something. And Amazon won't ship it to Hawaii. But anyway, I don't think rice milk explodes. I'm pretty...
Well, that just sounds personal at this level.
You know, except under pressure. Okay, but, you know, under pressure, everybody explodes. Anywho... any rate, folks, thank you so much for joining me and staying up late on your side, and we will talk to you next time.